Let me put it this way. I'd like to think that God is real.
I don't believe in God because the idea that an omniscient, loving being would judge me, who is mortal and ignorant, based on a few years' experience, I find to be rather a cruel thought.
All the power that God has, he, she, it has given to me. So we're definitely one.
I hope there's something else out there. It'd be fun to experience. Either that or we're all just evolved apes.
I was raised atheist. I don't believe in a higher power. But I also don't claim to know everything about the world.
I don't know. I don't know if there is one. I just pretend, I guess, and hope that there's something else out there.
Well, good morning. Welcome to Lakeline Campus, and for those of you joining us at Steiner, good morning, and greet your new campus pastor, Don, with open arms. We're so excited to have him, and just want to say, Explore God is in full swing, 355 churches participating, representing about 125,000 believers in the city of Austin, and in addition to that, actually last week for our first kickoff in all the churches across the city, we're seeing record attendance. Probably 12,000-13,000 visitors scattered between the churches last week. One of the interesting things this week is the head of the Austin Atheist Association attended one of our discussion groups with one of our pastors and thoroughly endorsed this, says this is the kind of thing that needs to be happening. The questions that we're asking and answering are the most significant questions for humanity, and everybody ought to be talking about this, right? So I would just say to you personally, like if the head of the Atheist Association says that we need to be having these conversations, I hope that you are. I hope this week you're talking to your coworkers and your neighbors and your friends about some of these really big issues. Now, last week we asked the question, does life have a purpose? Is there a purpose in life? And we kind of wrestled with that. Is there such a thing as some kind of real reason why we exist? Or are we simply just kind of acting out of our evolution? This week, we're going to take on an even bigger topic, and that is, does God exist, or is there a God? Now, some of you might start off right off the bat and say, well, I thought science has disproven God. In fact, the argument kind of goes something like this. Ancient man needed something to explain the phenomenons of nature. So ancient man came up with this idea of a supernatural, and that's been evolving over time. But we've come to a point now in our education and our understanding of science where that belief or that myth is no longer necessary. We've got plenty of evidence in the natural world to explain where we came from and how all this came about. So any really intelligent person would say, There really isn't any need for God, because if you're scientific, then you don't need God. I hear that argument all the time. So I had narrowed this down to three things that I wanted to talk about just on this one question from about 25. And then I decided, there's so much to cover today, I'm just going to narrow it down to one. Has science disproven God? Not according to the scientists. Not according to the scientists. So in 1916, a psychologist did a study of scientists to try to figure out what their beliefs was and ask this question. Do you believe that there is a God who personally communicates with humans today, even through something like prayer? In 1916, now keep in mind, 1916, Darwin was just beginning, as a theory, was just really beginning to grow legs. Pun intended. Darwin wrote The Origin of the Species in 1859, and by 1916, it was just really beginning to grow legs. At that time, 40% of the scientific community answered that question with an affirmative, 20% said they didn't know, And 40% said no to that question. Now, keep in mind, that doesn't mean that all 40% didn't believe in a God, because the question was, do you believe in a God that's personally speaking to humans, people today? So if they didn't believe in that part of it, they got lumped in the category of the non-believer. So 40%, yes, 20%, I don't know, and 40% said no. That same study was repeated in 1997. Not only had Darwin grown legs and eyes and ears and everything, but actually the whole Darwinian theory had been in major flux. And for those of you who studied the basic tenets of evolution 20 years ago, by the way, everything has changed. The people 20 years ago don't believe the same thing that you were taught. I mean, even the evolutionists. So you got to kind of keep up with this, particularly if you're going to make it your life. Meaning, in 1977, two sociologists repeated the same study, and guess what? Asked the same question. Do you believe that there's a God who speaks to people today, even through prayer? Around 40%, it was statistically the same. 40% said yes, 20% said I don't know, and 40% said we don't. We don't believe that. 80 years later, with all of this intellectual and academic and educational development, the people who actually do the science that's supposed to have disproven God don't all believe that. In fact, the famous Harvard evolutionist, Stephen Jay Gould, said this. He said, either half my colleagues are enormously stupid, or else their science of Darwinism is fully compatible with conventional religious beliefs and equally compatible with atheism. In other words, what he's saying is science has not disproven religion. Science has not proven religion. The bottom line is you can't, from science, observe the questions that are asked and answered in the arenas of God, faith, explanations of origins of how. Stephen Jay Gould understood that. Now, there's a new breed of atheists that don't. In fact, they argue exactly the opposite. But here is a leading evolutionist that says it's not incompatible, or else half my colleagues who believe in God are stupid. And obviously, he worked with them every day. He knew they weren't. So, having moved from that question, so everybody that just says science has disproven God, hold on to your horses for a minute, okay? Hold on to your horses. There's more to the story, and I want to make sure you get it. So I want us to actually start with the Bible. You say, well, you're going to go to the Bible to prove the existence of God? I want you to see something. This is phenomenal. In Romans chapter 1, the Bible actually lays out what the expectation would be for the presence of God. So if you grab a Bible, open it to Romans chapter 1, or if you've got a smartphone there or technology, you can look online, BibleGateway.com, follow along. We're going to look at three verses in Romans chapter 1. Three verses in Romans chapter 1. I'm chomping at the bit, okay? There's more I can't say than I can say, but let's go. Romans chapter 1, verse 18. Here's what it says. It says, the wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all godlessness and wickedness of men who suppress the truth by their wickedness. Only one thing to say from that verse. If you personally, for personal reasons, are suppressing the truth about God, that's not a good place to be. Okay, it starts out with the wrath of God. In other words, to diss God is not a good idea. If God really does exist, you've probably ticked him off by ignoring him, denying him, and especially if you're encouraging other people to do the same thing. So just a little warning to kind of get us started to realize the stakes are high. Okay, now, why would people suppress the truth in wickedness? Verse 19 says, since what may be known about God is plain to them. Really? It's plain? God is plain? He says, plain to them because God has made it plain to them. So in other words, all of the human race, from all of time, everywhere on the planet, it says that God has actually made himself plain so that you can know something about God no matter when you were born or where you lived. all of humanity. So universal knowledge of God is present. Where? I mean, I'm looking for it. Where is it present? Verse 20, he says, for since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. Now, I want to unpack that verse because it's very significant. It says that God himself has invisible qualities that are visibly manifest in the physical world. In other words, God himself, a spirit, is invisible. So we're not going to expect to see him walking down the street. But rather than God saying, okay, because I'm invisible and you guys live in the natural world that I've created, therefore you'll never know about me because of this gulf, what I'm going to do is I'm going to embed or implant in what has been made, the natural world, my invisible qualities, so that when you look at the natural world, you will see me. Now, let me give a qualifier here because this is really important. Some people say, can you believe in God without faith? And the answer to that is no. You need some level of faith to believe in God. So the invisible is demonstrated by the visible, but once you see it in the visible, it takes faith to say, okay, then what I'm seeing here actually points to God, the invisible God. So we're not taking faith out of the equation. We're just saying that we start with the world, with reason, with logic, everything that people in the scientific community accuse Christianity of not being able to embrace. And when I say everything, not everyone does this, but those who detract against faith, they say we start with myth and idea and fiction and feeling. Actually, the Bible says we start in a completely different place. We start with what has been made. We start with the physical world. We start by looking at nature, and we draw some conclusions, and then we go, wow, it must be God. Okay, does that make sense? Here's the flip side. The qualities that produce the physical world outside of God also are invisible. And it takes faith to embrace them. Now think with me, because this is very important to understand. The qualities outside, which Darwin and people after him have actually used to explain the origins of nature and of people and everything that we see, also are invisible. Chance is entirely invisible. It's entirely invisible. Time is invisible. We can see the effects of chance, we can see the effects of time, but we can't see them. Let me take you a step further. Natural selection is entirely invisible. And let me one-up you, because most of the evolutionists don't believe in natural selection anymore. They believe in something that the biologists are calling selfish genes. In other words, genes themselves who are selfish to try to propagate themselves, so the genes themselves are actually pushing the process along. Can you see a selfish gene? Now, you can see a gene, but can you understand the properties within it that make it selfish? In other words, what I'm saying is somewhere in the equation of trying to answer the big questions. You're either going to say, there's something going on here that I can't see, it's God, or there's something I can't see that's going on here, it's chance, or it's selfish genes, or it's time. But either way, you've got to make a jump at some point in time into one of those two categories, and everybody has to do it. So I'm proposing today that we take a look at these two things that God has placed within the physical world to ask the question, what do we see? So let's take the first one. Here in this passage, he says, for since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, what are there? There too, his eternal power. Let's look at that one first, and then secondly, his divine nature. Now, what do we mean by eternal power? In other words, a power that's bigger than nature itself that existed before nature came into being. So we ought to be able to look at what's been made and observe God's eternal power, his divine nature. What are we talking about? We're talking about the very quality or characteristics of God, of who he is as a person, his characteristics that are different than nature. In other words, his justice, his mercy, his love, his creativity, his organizational skills, those things ought to be embedded in creation in a way where we'd go, wow, that points to something outside, something bigger, something greater. So let's take the first one. And I'm going to fly through these. Folks, I'd love to spend about 40 minutes on each one. I'm going to spend about two. Okay, so here we go. So anyway, let me just say, I apologize if I'm not answering all your questions. I'm just putting seeds in your mind to begin to think about. Let's take the first one. Eternal power. Is there any clues of God's power that's greater than the physical world? And the first one that we would start off with is the universe had a beginning. The universe had a beginning. Let me start with Francis Collins. Francis Collins, the head of the Human Genome Project, a leading research scientist in the United States, was an atheist. Through his scientific study, he converted to Christianity because he felt the language of everything he was seeing was pointing to not only a God, but the God of the Bible, and he wrote a book called The Language of God. In an interview, here's what he says about the Big Bang. He says, we have this very solid conclusion that the universe had an origin, the Big Bang. 15 billion years ago, the universe began with an unimaginably bright flash of energy from an infinitesimally small point. That implies that before that, there was nothing. He says, I cannot imagine how nature in this case, the universe, could have created itself. He says, and the very fact that the universe had a beginning implies that someone was able to begin it. It seems to me it had to be outside of nature. Everything comes into being, has a beginning. Wouldn't that kind of point toward a beginner? A beginner? I was going to say, for the Big Bang to happen, we need a Big Banger. But everybody told me I couldn't say that, so I'm not going to say that. A beginner. Second, I mean, let's just take these. We'll take them really quickly. Second, the universe is fine-tuned. The universe is fine-tuned. What does that mean? Collins, again, in an interview, he says this. He says, when you look from the perspective of a scientist at the universe, it looks as if it knew we were coming. There are 15 constants. Example, the gravitational constant, various constants about strong and weak, nuclear force, etc., that have precise values. Now listen, if any one of those constants was off by even one part in a million, or in some cases, one part in a million million, the universe could not have actually come to the point where we see it today. Matter would not have been able to coalesce. There would have been no galaxies, stars, planets, or people. In other words, what he's saying is this. We find a constant in gravity. The quality of gravity is the same throughout the universe. Now, if that quality of gravity, if gravity was actually a little bit stronger, then all of matter would be drawn together into a big black hole and would cease to exist. If it was a little weaker, then matter would just spread throughout this vastness of the universe, and there would be no stars, there wouldn't be no planets, there would be no people. That's one of the 15. He says there are 14 other factors that actually make up the world as we know it today, and they are finely tuned. In other words, when you ask the question, why? Science has no answer for that. Nobody has an answer for that. Could it be that the universe is fine-tuned because there is a tuner, someone who tuned the universe? So a beginner, a tuner. Let's take a third one. The third one is kind of a strange one because we take it for granted, but we don't think about it much, that nature is predictably regular. Nature is predictably regular. For example, we know that under the same conditions, water in Austin boils at the same temperature today that it did yesterday, and we believe that it will boil at the same temperature tomorrow. There are constant laws operating that create a regularity of life that give us the confidence to actually begin to think logically, where we can look at past events and predict future events, because we have things that we're expecting, we're counting on. They're regular. They happen the same. And you know what? There's absolutely no reason for that. There's no reason to believe that tomorrow water wouldn't boil at a different temperature. There's no reason to believe that things wouldn't change from day to day. So if you are a cook or an engineer or a scientist, the ability to do what you do is based on a series of things that you can count on regularly in nature. Why? We don't know. Why? We don't know. Maybe things happen regularly because there is a sustainer. Someone who keeps things operating the same way so that we can live and relate in a world where we can depend on. In fact, Kepler, Galileo, Copernicus, Isaac Newton, the great mathematicians, developed their systems, scanned the universe, thought on the basis of what they understood to be a creator God who held things in order, and you can actually develop your math concepts because constants are out there. That's why science thrived in the Christian West, because these people were not looking for phenomena, they were looking for God. And in the process of looking for God, they developed the basic laws and theories of science that we hold to today. In fact, it's interesting that some people would actually try to kill God with the history and heritage of a belief in an orderly universe, an orderly God who's all-powerful and sustains things so we can measure and repeat and predict and look backwards in time. Interesting. So the question is, just take those three, and we could go on and on and on, 10, 15, 20 more. Let's just take those three. Those are physical things that we observe, but they point to some supernatural divine power that's greater than the physical universe. Now, that could be chance, could be time, it could be randomness. It could be one of those things. Well, let's think about it this way. We don't live our lives that way, do we? So, for example, if you were a convicted criminal and you were going to face the firing squad, and we put you right here on this spot, right here. You're going to stand right there, put the blindfold on you. We pulled out 50 of the greatest marksmen in the world and all gave them a gun with a live bullet. They all put it in there. They stood this distance away, so we're just like 6 or 7 feet away. They all pointed at the same time. You heard the fire ordered. You heard the guns click. You saw the smoke. The projectiles went flying, and not one of them hit you. What would you think? Oh, I wonder how often that happens. In a million billion universes, this must be the only one where that happens. Oh, maybe it happens all the time. There's so many universes out there. You know what you'd think? You would think that somebody in your family paid them off. Like this was intentional. 50 marksmen from 6 feet away with a loaded gun, they all wouldn't miss, right? The logic, the reasoning is when we see phenomenon that implies this level of intuning, intelligence, constancy, it makes more sense to think there's something behind that than that there's nothing behind that. It takes a greater leap of faith. That's the whole eternal power. Let's talk about his divine nature. What would we see in the character of God that would be evident in the world in which we live? Well, let me just give you three. The first one is a sense of purpose. Bertrand Russell in talking about the world, basically said that there's no reason why anybody would believe in any purpose. In fact, what he sums his argument up with is this statement. He says, we are an accidental collocation of atoms. In other words, based on there is no God, and everything has to have a naturalistic explanation, then we are simply here through a process that was random in nature. And so we just exist. Now, let me just say, if there's no purpose and no meaning in life, we talked a little bit about this last week, then evolution has played a very cruel trick on all of us. I mean, your dog wakes up in the morning, right? And your dog is not sitting down thinking, I wonder if I can get an advanced degree from the University of Texas, because by that, I might be able to do something to change the world. It never thinks that way. Never thinks, I wonder if I could cut a hit record, or if maybe if I got my video posted on YouTube, I'd get a big following. Maybe I could make a difference in the world or do something. I wonder why I'm here. I don't want to die without having made an impact. I wonder if there's anything after death. So why would it be if the lower forms did not evolve with this overwhelming sense of destiny, that higher life forms like humans would we be burdened to live our lives constantly trying to gain our identity, our reason, our day in the sun? Why would we not just simply get up and eat our breakfast and then find someone to steal stuff from so we didn't have to work, and then eat our lunch and then take a nap and then eat our dinner and then go to bed? Because it's just, there's no meaning. What did evolution do to place within us this feeling that we need some transcendent purpose beyond our physical needs, to the point where half of us are on antidepressants because we feel depressed about the life we're living or in the life we're living? Why? Where does that come from? Could it be that all of us have something stamped within us because this quality comes from an ultimate reason? I have a sense of purpose because there's something in me that senses destiny. There's a reason out there, and that's why 85% of us say there's got to be a meaning to life. We've got to have meaning in life. Second one is a moral compass. It's a moral compass. Let's think about it. Why do we say that it's better to tell the truth than to lie? Why do we say it's better to work and pay for our stuff than it is to steal? Why do we say it's better to make peace than make war? Why do we say it's better to love than to hate? Or it's better to be tolerant and accepting than to be racist and bigoted? Where does that come from? Where does that come from? Because in the whole scheme of survival of the fittest or selfish genes, it seems like the self-interest of me and my clan would trump everything else. My survival, my genetic material would trump everything else. And you say, well, we've learned to live together because we can live longer that way. That's true, but why would we live together with others? Why would we take care of the weak? Where does moral outrage come from? Why are some of you guys angry when you pulled in the parking lot today to see some Suburbans? Why? Where's that come from? It's interesting that as you study ancient civilizations, some of the first things that are committed to writing are moral codes of law. Here's one of the other things. If you study religions and civilizations almost exclusively across the board, the laws and the moral codes are the same. Why? Where does that come from? Could it be that the reason why we have this sense of right and wrong, that we have the sense that there are things that are bad to do, that when we see someone taking advantage of another, we don't applaud them and say, hey, man, push those genes forward, buddy. You're going to succeed. Your family, you're going to go for it. Enslave other people. Make them do your work for you. I mean, that seems to make sense. Why is it that we have outrage against that? The reason why we have outrage against that could be that there is a lawgiver that there is a lawgiver, that there is a divine sense of right and wrong that come from the nature of the one who put us here, something that is not shared in the plant and animal world. Pulitzer Prize writer Annie Dillard, in fact, the book she wrote, got the Pulitzer Prize from, I want to share a little bit from that book with you, but it's interesting. Annie Dillard said she just needed to get away from the rat race of people, the rat race of the city, man's injustice to man. And so she went out and for a year sat by a pond, by a creek and a pond, and just watched nature, thinking, if I watch the beauty of nature, then that will cleanse my soul. Guess what she found? Let me share it with you. She says, there is not a person in the world that behaves as badly as praying mantises. In fact, in one of her writings, she actually described watching a water bug take its long horn and stick it into the head of a toad and then suck the brains out of the toad with no sense whatsoever of that cute little toad or what it meant to its offspring or how it enhanced the beauty of the pond with its croaking at night. Not, didn't even think about it. Let me go on with what she says. She says, but wait, you say? There's no right or wrong in nature. Right and wrong is a human concept. Precisely, she says, we are moral creatures in an amoral world. Or consider the alternate. If it is only human feelings that is freakishly amiss, all right then, it is our emotions that are amiss. We are freaks. The world is fine. And let us all go have lobotomies to restore us to a natural state. We can leave, lobotomize, go back to the creek, and live on its banks as untroubled as any muskrat or reed. You first. Like, we say that we are just like everything else in nature, and yet we are totally different when it comes to right and wrong, purpose in life, moral values. Is it possible that there's a divine lawgiver out there? Or maybe there isn't. Maybe we feel this angst for nothing? That doesn't make sense. Third one, passion for beauty. Why do we have a passion for beauty? Where does that come from? Why is that? Does a fox ponder a beautiful sunset? Or a snail ever write a symphony? Where does that come from? Why do we have things in us that really, from a utilitarian standpoint, don't do us any good at all? They don't advance us in any way, but they seem to speak to a deep longing inside, a longing for love, a longing for transcendence, a longing for connection, a longing for inspiration, these deep things inside of us that for a moment, you might see it in a painting or hear it in a song or see it in a steak dinner. But momentarily, you see it and you experience it and then it's gone, but the appetite remains. For a moment, you're caught up in the beauty of Mozart. And you feel things that don't make sense to you. Or you're listening to a country song, and you feel the same thing as you spit out the window. And yet, you just continue to feel like there's got to be something more. Where does that come from? Is it possible that what we're talking about here is that there is a satisfier? There's something great out there that uses the emptiness inside of us to kind of draw us toward Him, this invisible one who has visible traces all over the world. C.S. Lewis says this. Now, C.S. Lewis was an atheist, scholar, medieval literature, ran into stout Christians like J.R.R. Tolkien, Lord of the Rings trilogy, and others that just continued to talk to him about the incredible nature of man and the beauty of the gospel. Finally, he trusted Jesus. I mean, it just kind of overwhelmed him over time. Here's what he says. He says, if I find in myself desires which nothing in this world can satisfy, the only logical explanation is I was made for another world. Or we could say, I was made for someone who is out of this world. Now, you may say, Tim, those are some really interesting thoughts. And if you're convinced, you may be going, oh, yeah, that's exactly what I think. You may feel some of those things, and you may think that. Or you may be thinking, you know, man, like, this just is, like, that's a lot to take in just a few minutes. Let me just throw something out there. If there is no God, if these visible signs that seem to point to an invisible God, if there is no God, it should be pretty easy to figure it out, right? It should be pretty easy to figure it out. And Jesus made it really clear, like, how you go about doing this. Oh, by the way, all of these things that I talked about today, they don't prove that God exists. There is one thing that does prove that God exists, and we'll talk about that when we come to Jesus Christ, because the resurrection is a real, identifiable, historical moment in time where something actually happened on this planet that can't be explained by any other thing than something supernatural. So we'll talk about that in a couple weeks. So I'm not saying that there isn't actually evidence for God. There actually is. But in all of these things we talked about, here's what Jesus said. He gave some great advice in the Sermon on the Mount. He said, listen. He said, ask. Now the word ask there means ask and keep on asking. It's not a casual prayer, prayer, God, if you're there, show up. Ask, keep on asking, start asking, and you will receive. He said, seek, start the process of seeking, and you will find. Knock, start knocking on the door. Keep on knocking, and the door will be open to you. And then he promises, for anyone who asks, he will receive. Anyone who seeks, he will find. To anyone who knocks, the door will be open. Now, if you knock on the door of time, chance, probabilities, I guarantee you, they will never speak back to you. But the cool thing about God is God does. He intervenes. He speaks back. So let me just throw out a few things to you. Ask. So let's talk about asking just a sec. Here's what I propose to you. Start asking. Like, just start asking. Get up in the morning and say something like this. God, if you're out there, open my eyes to see you. Clear up the cobwebs that might be in my way. Just open my eyes. It can't hurt, can it? It can't hurt, can it? Just open my eyes. Ask and you will receive. Seek. Seek. Why don't you spend some time trying to understand? Maybe read some of the most well-known literature in all of history. More copies of the Bible have been printed than any other book in history. Pick up the Gospel of John that talks about Jesus in the Bible. Pick that up and just read through it. It'll take you about 2 hours. If you're a slow reader, it'll take you about 3. Just read it. Begin to seek. I would encourage you to go on the website, exploregod.com. There's just tons of answers to questions and films to watch, short films to watch, give you all kinds of information. Or pick up a book like the one I used in preparation for this talk, The Reason for God by Tim Keller. Great book. I gave you some of the thoughts that came from him and some of the thoughts from other people, but this will really go in deep and give you the documentation and all that. Seek. And then knock. Knock. Hey, join an Explore God group. Do like my atheist friend. Join an Explore God group. Go into one of those. Sit around. Don't be scared of that. Don't be scared of that. I mean, you can do other things with your time. I mean, a lot of us spent time yesterday being really disappointed. In fact, almost everybody in here universally felt that way. Now, I watched the Stetson Hatters volleyball team win a really good match, and so I didn't feel so bad, but my daughter plays for them, you see, so that was kind of good. But I mean, just take some time to get involved in it. Call us. We'd love to have one of our pastors sit down with you. Like, knock. Like, I want to know. Talk to me. Help me think through this. Or ask a friend who maybe has traveled this path a little further than you. So ask. Seek. Knock. And the door will be open to you. We're on this incredible journey to explore God. I want you to be fully engaged. Let me pray for you. Father in heaven, I just thank you for the people here who've come to listen, to take this in, and to go out and have these conversations throughout the community. And I pray, Father, for any single person that's sitting here today that is starting to feel a nudge, to maybe open their eyes and think differently than they have in the past. I just pray for them that nudge would turn into momentum and they would begin to take those steps. We want everybody here to understand what the issues are and then to make up their mind. And Father, may we operate with one another in love so even when we disagree, we validate the humanness of each other and we encourage each other to continue on that process. Father, you're doing amazing things in our city, in our churches, and in our community. We pray that you would continue that, especially with people today. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.